better.
Blog Talk Radio.
I would say probably if preseason is the 4th, I'd say training camp is probably
2 weeks before that, right?
Yeah, probably like 2 weeks before that. Okay, I just need Ian on there.
September 27.
Yeah, makes sense. Let me get that in there.
What the fuck? NBA training camps open the 27th. Preseason begins the 30th. Wait, is this right? Yeah,
27th. Well, for the Knicks, it's the 4th. Their first game is the 4th.
Yeah. Okay, so.
You probably have, like, maybe teams, some teams may be playing overseas or playing, like, them little, like, I know NBL is playing, NBA is playing the NBL. I know Phoenix is playing a game, and I forgot who else.
Phoenix lost the 18th. I remember that shit. I remember the season starting November.
Yep.
Trying to spread these games out. Oh, and all these crazy back-to-back situations.
Okay. Training camp questions. Julius Obi. D-Rose impact. I got that one down. Will it be RJ's team? Wing rotation. Take a couple more. Go ahead.
Hey, I don't know if it's a training camp, but I mean, I guess it is. Like, what
I want to milk it. You know what I'm saying? I think maybe the pressure one. I mean, these could all be like season preview ones, right? But I'm kind of milking it. And then we could do a season preview one and kind of do the same.
Yeah, because we could hold back on the pressure one because that's a conversation.
We can go
all sorts of ways for that one and really have a conversation.
Right. So, I mean, definitely wing rotation is a training camp one. Like, who you know, solidifies a spot? I think, you know, will the offense still be running through RJ? You know, with Brunson.
Yeah, there has to be some type of system offense, some type of question around that because of a new player, Julius, and then RJ, you know, all that, all those ingredients.
And I'm saying, you know, again, the whole vets versus young guys playing time-wise, like, will the organization finally be on the same page in terms of that? I think those are three good ones. Training camp, right? So we can save some for like season preview type.
Right.
Like maybe the Rose one might be a season preview one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So maybe you say like a three burning questions for training camp. Organization, wing rotation, RJ. And I think the Obi Julius one, right? Because like if they're considering cutting some of Julius' minutes, does Obi get run with the first team, or get more run with Jalen Brunson?
To be honest, if the roster stays the same, that's probably the biggest training camp question.
Yeah,
it's the biggest training camp thing that people are going to look at. Like even from the first game of preseason, like it's that much of a must watch situation.
Right. Right. All right. So let's stick to those
with
four.
Tibbs, people feel like, you know, he gives you immediate hints of, as to what he's going to do. So people are going to keep a close eye on that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, okay. All right. Let's just open up the Discord. Oh, it's 9:30. Where's Ian at? I might move to the show. Line up the show. It's in the email, right? Oh, I did. Yeah, I did. Okay. Okay, he said it'd be on in 3 minutes. Okay, no problem. Forgot to put this shit up on IG. All right, fresh off holiday break. When did we say training camp starts? 27?
Mm-hmm. I mean, on NBA.com, that's what it says. I don't know specifically the Knicks on the 27th, but they said training camp starts on the 27th.
Yeah, they typically all start around the same time.
So usually maybe a day, maybe somebody, you know, a handful of teams on the 27th and everybody on the 28th. That's usually how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the 27th could be those early teams that have those first preseason games, right, and then the Knicks could be the 28th.
Right. Okay.
Damn, bro, that's a few weeks away. That's crazy.
Yeah.
We here.
Summer went by quick.
Went by fast, man.
Fuck.
And then I feel like it got cool. Like, as soon as Labor Day was over, it was cool yesterday and today.
I walked outside and
that shit is whack because it was the opposite for the fucking winter. It's like the longest winter ever. Felt like it was brick forever, man.
Yep.
And then now it's like the summer was like right to the teeth.
CZ on.
Yo, CP, you watching the opener tomorrow?
Opener.
What NFL?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. You got what is it, Rams and...
Bills. It should be a good game.
Yeah.
I'm definitely watching that. Do I have anybody going? Oh, I got Stephon Diggs back again in my other league. And did I get him in our league? I think I got him in our league. Diggs going. Do I have any Rams? I got Cam Akers going.
I got too many leagues. I'm doing a draft right now as we speak.
Hey, Wallet. Oh, two's like my maxes. Then I start like rooting against myself. Like, you know, it's crazy.
I got four.
Oh, you're wild. Yeah, you're bugging.
On the live show, fucking CP's going to. So give me your thoughts. Alex.
He's
going to say Justin Jefferson, man.
He's going to start. Yeah, I got Allen Robinson, Cam Akers, and Diggs. I got Diggs in two leagues. So Allen Robinson, Cam Akers, Stephon Diggs going. I got Tyler Lockett in two leagues, I think. Darryl Henderson, I got him on the bench.
Tyler, you're going with Seahawks?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky, man. And one of the things I learned, like, even if a receiver looks good on paper, you can't go with bum quarterbacks. But you know what I mean? Like, bum quarterbacks throwing to them. Because that always impacts their season. So, like, yeah, and Geno, I trust, man. I guess that's why you had an issue with it, man. Geno's bouncing back. Y'all gave up on him. Yeah, I went to what's his name? That's in Carolina. Now you got the Mormon kid who's weird. He's like, you know, sleeping with his mom's friends and stuff. He's all over the place. He's all
kind of
weird.
He's got that dog, all right, bro? He's got that dog.
What's up, guys?
Right?
So they didn't start yet, right?
No, not yet. That guy, how you doing, bro?
Good, good. Just tired from playing basketball earlier.
Nice, nice. Did you win? Did you lose?
Yeah. We won one game, but, like, there's only so much you can do when, like, another team has, like, two big-ass dudes and one guy's a college player. You know what
Damn.
I mean? Like, dudes started going bonkers, like, hitting, like, Kobe fadeaways and shit.
Oh, man. Sound like a long night.
He was, like, 6'5", 6'6". But are you talking football? Because the Giants play Sunday, right?
I guess.
I'm ready. I'm ready to be stressed out already.
I guess. All right, Ian T, let me set him up and get started.
All right. Ready.
There he is. Okay. Let's get this started.
Recording in progress.
Okay. Hey,
CP.
How you doing, man?
Yo, my apologies.
No,
bro.
No worries.
My fault. Sorry, fellas.
No worries at all, man.
All good.
How's everything on your end?
Good. It's bedtime. Killing me.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm late, man.
Yeah, when they're fighting to sleep, man, I've been there, man.
Brutal. How are you guys?
Yeah, doing all right, man. Doing all right. Had a nice holiday layover. Just getting back into the swing of things.
Nice, nice. Everybody looks good. Background,
it, man.
Strong.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Where's Alex?
Ian, you know when the Knicks start training camp? I know the NBA is the 27th. I don't think it has been announced yet.
Yeah, I don't know. It's usually like that Monday of that week or the Tuesday of that week. So 26th yeah. probably is media day, I would assume.
Okay.
But they, yeah, I don't know yet.
Okay, we got Ian there.
I could use a couple more weeks, but just...
Summer flew by way too fast.
Yeah. No, no off season.
You go on vacation anywhere?
It was local. Like, drove a couple places with the family. Mm. Feel like jumping on a plane and going anywhere. And now kids are back in school, so yeah, it was nothing huge, but it was a good summer.
Yeah,
you guys have a good summer.
Yeah, overall, yeah. Man,
mm-hmm.
definitely.
I know you did, CP. I saw you in Vegas, bro.
Yeah. I was all over the place, man. I was in Miami twice. I was in Vegas. I was in Jamaica. Yeah, so it was a good time, man.
The summer of CP.
That's right.
We were talking about how quick it just started to get chilly as soon as September hit.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's like the last 2 days have been pretty cool.
Snap a finger. I'm ready for football.
Oh. Yep. Who's your team, Ian?
I was about to ask that.
Yeah, Giants.
Childhood.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's gonna be a rough one, man.
Yeah, it's not been good. Not been good. I have Eli and I have Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's all we got, man. All right, you guys ready? JD just sent a show. Okay. Hang on. All right. 27. Okay. Okay. All right. Pretty much ready to go. Ian, just give me some levels real quick.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Cool. JD.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Alex.
Testing.
We got Ian Begley, the GOAT reporter the New York Knicks on. Let's go.
Okay.
I like that sound.
All right, let me get my...
Save it for the live show.
Again, amp, man. I got to get amp for the live show. That's what it's all about.
Okay. All right. Get my theme music going. Okay. I'm going to start up. All right, here we go. Salute to Knicks Nation on this Wednesday night. Back after a little holiday hiatus. Knicks Fan TV Live presented by Manscaped. Knicks Weekly, the weekly recap show where we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly for the orange and blue. Just about 3 weeks away from training camp, people. We are ramping up quickly to the 2022-2023 campaign. And who else do we want to have on the show to kind of provide an entryway into the new season, kick things off, if you will, than our guy Ian Begley, Knicks insider of SNY TV, CP the franchise here, JD Sports Talk, Alex Chataros. So to everybody in the chat, man, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Good to be back with everybody here. And needed a little break, man. Because, you know, we all these past couple of weeks, we were on this Mitchell trade and a hype train. And a couple weeks ago, we were quickly derailed from those hopes and dreams. So, Ian, we're going to put the nail in the coffin on the trade tonight. But before we do, what happened, man? How did this thing go from being the Knicks to lose to ultimately them losing it?
Yeah, so pretty straightforward here is the Jazz viewed, or some people with the Jazz viewed R.J. Barrett as a linchpin in this thing. Some of them felt that Barrett had to be in the deal to get it done. The Knicks decided, obviously, that Monday before the trade happened that they were going to extend R.J. Barrett. And I don't think that necessarily in the Knicks' mind or the Jazz mind precluded
Barrett from becoming available in future talks, but they decided instead of including Barrett in a trade, they set that deadline for that Monday night, and they couldn't come to an agreement on a deal, so they extend Barrett, and then Cleveland circles back with Utah that next morning. A couple days later, they get a deal done, so the Knicks, even when the Cavs were talking to the Jazz, I think if the Knicks wanted to, they could have blown that Cleveland offer out of the water. They had the draft capital to do it. They had the players to do it. So in my mind, it was still the Knicks' deal to lose, even at that point when Utah and Cleveland had circled back. But the Knicks, my understanding is they never got a chance to counteroffer that Cavs offer that the Jazz ended up accepting. And some people with the Knicks felt like they put offers on the table that at least were equal to or exceeded that Cavs offer, which Utah obviously rejected. And here we are. A couple weeks later, whatever it is, Donovan Mitchell in Cleveland. The Knicks, pretty similar roster to last year, sitting here a couple weeks ahead of training camp.
Well, what do you make of the notion of bad blood and that the Jazz weren't operating in good faith? You know, there was rumblings that they weren't happy about the Knicks showing up to that first-round playoff matchup between the Jazz and the Mavs. Obviously, Brunson and Spider were the marquee matchups there. And then, you know, on Twitter, you had Donovan Mitchell liking a tweet that basically talked about, you know, players not having loyalty to their teams because of things like this. Because clearly, you know, people thought he wanted to come to the Knicks. But what do you think about the Jazz potentially operating out of bad faith there?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, what you said about the Jazz being upset when William Wesley and Julius Randle, I think it was those guys were courtside at the playoff game. I apologize if it was not both of them, but I know it was William Wesley. Yeah. The people with the Jazz were surprised and upset about that, so that's accurate. Whether that played a role in negotiations and how everything went down 2 months after the fact, I would be surprised if it played a significant role in how everything played out. I do think that the Knicks, you know, again, even without RJ Barrett, I think there's an opportunity for them to make an offer that Utah can't say no to, and they chose not to do that. And so I think maybe the idea that they were upset about William Wesley in the playoff game, maybe that played a small role in how things played out, but I would be surprised if Utah said, hey, we're going to take a deal that doesn't make the most sense for us. Just to spite the Knicks. We're going to string the Knicks along to the 11th hour, and then we're going to go with somebody else just to make them look bad. I would assume that their approach was more so, let's get the best deal we can for our team right now and call it a day when we're done, when we get to that point. So, yeah, maybe a little bit of played a role into it, but I can't see it playing a major role in how things played out.
The Gerson Rosas angle. Now, they hired Gerson Rosas, who was the former president of basketball operations with the Minnesota Timberwolves. They hired him about midseason last year as a consultant to Leon Rose. And while I'm not so privy to what, you know, what's going on in front offices, I just felt like, you know, is it too many chefs in the kitchen? You have Scott Perry, who's your GM. You have World Wide West, who still to this day, nobody knows what he does. You know, he's kind of like Tommy from the show Martin, man. Like, does he have a job? Does he not have a job? Then you have Leon Rose.
Oh, wow. You know, wait, who's Co in this Martin?
Who's Co? It might be Scott Perry, man, because we just rarely hear from him.
Wow.
You know, but the point is, it just
is there a Pam?
Like, who would be the Pam in this? Maybe it's Danny Ainge in this situation. You know, but it just seemed like, but you know, the rumblings were that he was the one that was negotiating on this trade. What did you hear in that regard? And you know, it kind of just seemed like who's in charge and who has what role within the organization kind of just seemed, you know, kind of chaotic in the front office a little bit.
Yeah, so my understanding at the start of this thing was that Gerson Rosas and Justin Zanuck were dealing with each other directly, and they were dealing with, like, day-to-day negotiations. I don't think that's that uncommon in general when for the number two person or the person who's not the president of basketball operations to be in regular contact with the team that you're in active trade discussions with. I think that, you know, it's happened before in the league. But I think that what makes this different is for the Knicks, you know, you said it, you have Scott Perry, general manager, you have William Wesley, you have Brock Aller. and other voices that are weighing in on these things. And then Gerson Rosas, who, by the way, yes, he was hired as a consultant. And I think I know he later got a more formal title. So he's the guy that is a running point on the negotiation. And that's the only thing that makes it a little awkward to me, because you have guys that you brought in 2 years ago and that you have had with you. And you have the guy who you just brought in midway through last season. Some of it, I think, is relationship-based sometimes with these things. It's the person who has the best relationship with the counterpart on the other side, and that's why things go the way they do. But the optics are a little bit odd in this instance, given the chronology of the hirings.
And as we talk about optics, you know, going back to RJ, because here it is, he's in several iterations of trade proposals, or those that we've heard, right, those that came out. And then they extend the deal. They extend his rookie deal. Woj comes out and says this puts the trade in jeopardy, but he could still be dealt. Ultimately, once the Mitchell trade is announced, right away you see the press the press release by the Knicks about the extension. He's our guy. Blah blah blah. But how do they mend that fence? I mean, there has to be some sort of awkwardness between the two camps in that, you know, you're ready to trade the kid in one regard, and now all of a sudden, he's our guy. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, well, one thing, CP, you mentioned earlier, like a lot of cooks in the kitchen, a lot of voices. To me, you know, I know that there were people there that were saying, let's do whatever it takes to get Donovan. Let's put RJ in the deal. Let's go. Let's get him. This is a great opportunity. But to me, if I'm communicating to RJ Barrett in the aftermath and I'm Leon Rose, I'm saying, hey, you know, there was a lot of reports, a lot of leaks, and I wasn't the one who was signing off on anything. At the end of the day, we love you. Now, whether that's true or not, you know, is up for debate. But that's how I would spin it if I were the Knicks at this point. And I think RJ Barrett, though, you know, he is certainly mature well beyond his years. And also, I think he likes being in New York, and I think he handles New York well, and I think he's comfortable, you know, being here for the foreseeable future. So I think from that perspective, it's probably an easier fence to mend than it would be, you know, another player who, you know, wasn't as comfortable here or wasn't, you know, feeling like this was the right fit for him moving forward. I think if RJ Barrett, if you asked him and you said, would you want to be in a market other than New York, or would you want to be in New York on your second deal? I think he would tell you New York, and that's regardless of the trade conversation.
Now, they're sitting here. They didn't get Mitchell. They have 11 first-round picks over the next 7 years. You know, Fournier, Randall, those guys were also in trade talks this past offseason or this current offseason. Is there another move that, you know, could be down the pipeline? You know, fans are looking at, say, Gilgeous-Alexander from the Thunder. You're hearing OG Anunoby. You know, is that more fan pipe dreams, or is there legitimate interest in these guys?
Well, I think that anytime you hear about a star that's going to maybe be on the block, the Knicks will be interested to a degree just because of where they are in the team-building process. They're built in a way to go ahead and strike when those opportunities present themselves, which I think leads to more questions about the Donovan Mitchell situation. But let's say something happens and, you know, Andrew Wiggins, it seems like he and Golden State aren't going to come to a long-term agreement, or things go haywire in Minnesota, Karl Towns becomes available, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, that's a situation that the league is keeping an eye on because of Oklahoma City's direction. The Knicks are going to be interested, and they'll have the assets to get involved in the conversations. But to me, CP, and I think that you feel this way too, but correct me if I'm wrong, the risk in waiting is that situation, whatever it is, because there's going to be another situation, there's going to be a disgruntled star, is that situation more advantageous than the Mitchell situation was, and does it put you in better position to build this thing out and to build out your team into a perennial contender than that Mitchell acquisition would have? That's the question, right, to me, when you talk about the next move. We obviously don't know the answer, but to me, that's the framing by which I would look at it.
No question about it. And we're talking to Ian Begley, Knicks insider of SNY TV. So to everybody in the chat, once again, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Knicks Weekly presented by Manscaped. Al, go ahead and jump in.
Ian, so obviously we didn't get Donovan Mitchell on at any part, but we still have a lot of youth on this team. So is the front office looking to move in the direction of like development, or are they trying to compete? Where do you see this team moving forward right now?
You know, I think they have an opportunity, and I can't tell you that I know specifically if they're going to totally go in one direction or totally go in the other direction, but they have an opportunity now, right, to do something that a lot of Knicks fans, I think, have wanted, which is grow organically, give young players minutes, and allow them to learn on the job and play them ahead of maybe a veteran who gives you a chance to win a little bit more that night. So they have the opportunity to do that. I think there are divergent. I know that at least during the season and towards the aftermath of last season, there were some divergent opinions about which way the rotations should go, veterans versus young players. And I know that, you know, Tom Thibodeau, at least in a couple conversations in the offseason, you know, showed an openness to reducing a veteran's minutes in favor of a young player. So, you know, I think that it would make sense for them to at least go that direction to a greater degree than they did last year. I don't know specifically if they've committed to that at the moment, but I would be surprised if, you know, let's say a player like Quentin Grimes, he doesn't increase his minutes in a significant way this season. The Julius Randle Obi Toppin, you know, debate or whatever you want to call it, conundrum, that's still there. That's going to be there until it isn't. And so they have to navigate that. But I do think that they'll lean a little bit towards young players, getting young players minutes, just because look at that roster. It is full with young players, as you said, Alex.
For sure. Now, based on how the trade talks ended in the long pursuit of Donovan Mitchell, do you see that there's pressure on this team for them to make the playoffs this upcoming season?
I don't know, playoffs, but I do think that you have to show a sustained improvement. And if you can get to like the play-in tournament and you can do so in a way that allows some of the young players to take steps forward and your young core looks better in mid-April than it did in late October, I think that's success for this team. And whether that means you end up in a play-in tournament, bottom seed in the East, in the eighth, whatever, seventh, I don't know if that matters as much as showing a direction, a clear direction, and then having success, sustained success over the course of the season with regards to young players taking steps forward.
Yeah, and I have a question in regards to, you know, Cam Reddish. He's been in every rumor possible, it seems.
Yeah.
And he's been in so many trade possibilities, yet he's still a Knick.
Yeah.
And so do you think that at this point the Knicks actually want to see what they have, being that the Donovan Mitchell trade did not happen, and you see they want to see what they have in him before potentially making a move with Reddish?
Well, depending on – you know, who you talk to or who, you know, who's speaking for the team, you know, some people absolutely want to see Reddish in the rotation. They want to see him playing. They want to see, as you said, JD, what they have in Cam Reddish, because they haven't really had a chance to since they traded for him. But I believe Tom Thibodeau has the final call on the rotation. He has throughout his coaching tenure here. I don't expect that to change. So the opinion that really matters here is Thibodeau's. And Thibodeau, you know, he leaned towards the young guys after some injuries happened last season. And then obviously late second half of the season, you saw a lot more of the young players. I'm interested to see, and Cam Reddish is a litmus test, I think, is how much more leaning Thibodeau does towards these young guys. But if you look at this rotation, JD, right now, like, is he going to play ahead of Fournier? Like, who is he playing ahead of? Is there a clear path for him to be in this rotation? I don't see a clear path. He's going to have to earn it through training camp and the preseason if it's going to happen. But it's going to be difficult. I don't see a clear path. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you guys see it and I don't. But it's hard for me to see it right now.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, JD.
No, I was going to say, go ahead, JD.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Number one, based on the fact that you still have Fournier here, you invested the money in him. And then also, for all year, we've heard how much Tibbs is raving about Grimes. And the fact that maybe he was a sticking point in this Mitchell trade. So I think Grimes is the one that gets kind of elevated into that spot if Fournier gets dealt or moved to the bench. And I'm with you. I don't see a path for Cam unless there's an injury, God forbid, or a trade. But I do see the need for Cam because this team is sorely lacking in athleticism. And also in wing versatility, we just don't have that right now, just the way that the roster is made up. Yes, you can point to Fournier's three-point prowess and how he might be able to fit, but I just don't see Fournier really impacting winning in that sort of way. I never really saw him as that type of player. And so I think the organization certainly has a decision to make in that regard.
And if you're not playing Cam Reddish, what are you doing with him? And if you're not playing Cam Reddish and you traded for him, what does that say about kind of the thought process before the trade, after the trade, and this season? So it's an interesting player to keep an eye on for me for many different reasons.
Absolutely.
Ian, my last question to you would be, since the Donovan Mitchell trade, there's been a lot of talk about, where do the Knicks go now in terms of their philosophy, how they want the roster to look on opening night. There's been a lot of talk about certain players that people think should be on the trade block to open up paths for some of the young players. Do you think the Knicks, with whatever trade that they could possibly make, are done for the offseason, or do you think they'll be actively looking to make a move before the season starts?
Well, I think whenever you have like the potential movement that you have right now in the league, and you're looking at like the Russell Westbrook situation in particular, but there's other teams that are still kind of in flux. I think there's always going to be the chance of something happening, but I think they're less likely to do something of significance at this point because we're so close to training camp. Now, I think with Evan Fournier, his name was out there in a significant way in those trade talks. And I know there had been concerns among some in the organization about he and Jalen Brunson defensively in the same backcourt. So, maybe something shakes there. But, people talk about Julius Randle, and, he's kind of that lightning rod in terms of, is he going to get traded and is Obi Toppin going to get more minutes? I think if the Knicks were just going to go that route, they could have done it before the Donovan Mitchell trade. And I understand maybe you want to see what happens with Mitchell before you make that kind of decision. But the idea that, he wasn't out there in a big way pre-Donovan Mitchell, I'd be a little bit surprised if they then pulled the trigger and did a deal for Randle where you're essentially trading Randle at one of his lowest points of value. And I don't know what you'd take back, but I can't see them just dumping him at this point. And also, I've said it before, I think it's still the case, like wherever he ends up, he'll be involved in the process. They're not going to blindside him and send him somewhere where he doesn't want to go because of his relationship with those up high in the organization, including Leon Rose and William Wesley.
We're talking to Knicks insider Ian Begley of SNY TV. Salute to everybody in the chat. Once again, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Knicks Fan TV Live, Knicks Weekly, presented by Manscaped. Let's take a couple quick calls real quick. Let's go to the phones. Truth from Arkansas. Let's go to Arkansas. Hear from my guy, Truth. Truth, how you doing, man?
What's going on, Knicks Nation? Ian Begley, CP, JB, Lightskin, Alex. Let's get them buttons up, man.
Let's go.
I'm kind of glad we didn't get Donovan, though it would have been blockbuster. It was too expensive and probably would have set us back farther than the Melo trade. It wasn't no sense of getting a star that we ain't had Obi Grimes and IQ, and then we ain't had a future pieces to build. And I think RJ could be our Donovan Mitchell, and I hope we sign Cam.
Okay. Appreciate the call, man. Yeah, Eve, when we had the show on Thursday, man, 72% of the fans, we polled the fans, 5,000 people voted, 72% were okay with not getting Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like the people, I think, in that camp like the restraint that was shown. They like the idea of, continuing to see this young core. And I think, some people with the Knicks certainly, I think, felt similarly to Truth in terms of like depleting the roster for Donovan Mitchell. And not just Donovan Mitchell per se, but any trade you're going to make for an elite player. I think the idea was they wanted to have enough after the trade to be able to be in conversations for other significant deals, and there was concern about that. So I think Truth, his line of thinking there is spot on.
And I've been having numerous debates with Fat Joe on this topic over the past couple of weeks, man. Even one this morning at 8 o'clock this morning, I'm on IG Live with Joe, man. Jumping back and forth. You know, he's on the instant gratification wave. I'm trying to talk him off the ledge, man.
Listen, man. First of all, I love that Fat Joe has become like the face, one of the faces of fandom for this franchise, along with yourself. I think Spike Lee. I don't want to get into the Spike Lee thing, but
yeah.
Fat Joe, I respect his passion. They brought him out for the Kemba Walker press conference at the Garden, and that didn't obviously go well.
Yeah.
He called Julius Randle the King of New York at the end of the season that Randle had, which was fantastic, and then that didn't go well. So I'm not saying like there's like a Fat Joe kiss of death, anything like that. That's not a J.D. Fitz reference, but I just, Fat Joe, I love him. I love him being out there, but I want this team to do well for him, and I want him to be excited about rooting for winning basketball. For him, fans like yourself, CP, Alex, J.D., like I don't get involved in like rooting one way or the other, but
just the
passionate fans like yourself, man, I just want to see you guys, and ladies and gentlemen, just be happy and have something to be excited about. For once.
No question about it. Last one for you, Ian. Let's go to ATL and talk to Mark. Mark, how you feeling, man?
Hey, what's going on? Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
All right. First of all, respect to CP, JD, Alex, and Ian, of course. I'm Mark Ham, man. I grew up in Jersey, been a fan for over 40 years, and I'm tired of talking about the Donovan Mitchell thing. But CP, I got a question for you. Why is everybody talking about trading Randle for Westbrook? What would that solve? I must be ignorant. I must be living in a closet because I don't see where that makes sense.
Yeah.
So answer that question. Why get rid of him, Julius Randle, for Westbrook?
Yeah.
And what is the thing that's going to fix us? So part A and part B. You got CP.
Appreciate the call, man. So I think the main objective that fans wanted to trade Randle for Westbrook was to net an asset out of it, right? Fans are very interested in selling low on Julius, you know, despite what Ian's saying, it doesn't seem like the organization is going to go in that route. But I think the general feeling amongst the fan base is that, look, you got to open up that spot for Obi Toppin, man. You have to open up that spot for Obi Toppin. Right now, there looks like no clear path. They signed Hartenstein as the backup big man. You know he's going to get his minutes. Mitch is going to get his minutes. The only way you're going to get significant minutes out of Toppin is if Julius's minutes gets throttled down, he gets traded, or a miracle happens and they share the court together for longer than 2 or 3 minutes a game. Which one of those is most likely? I'm not so sure, but I think that's what the fans are looking for. I feel like where this team is right now, I just feel like they can go with Julius Randle right now, and I don't see it being that far. I have a hard time seeing him kind of fitting in and growing chemistry with Brunson and RJ, although I hope he does. But I just feel like we need an evaluation of the youth to see what we have. They spent an number eight pick on him. In 2 years, you got to decide if you're going to spend money on him. And I talk about that, Ian, in terms of asset management and why the Knicks are never in position to be comfortable making a trade like Donovan Mitchell. They whiff on Frank. They whiff on Kevin Knox. Two back-to-back years. That's big. Your assets have to be able to help you win games or be able to help you move the needle and bring in somebody else without hamstringing you for the future. And the Knicks still can't get to that point. And now you have Obi here, a good player who may be capped at maybe 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes a night.
Right. And you know what? Those two drafts, the Knox and the Ntilikina draft, killed them. I think they've drafted better more recently. You know, you look at, excuse me, Mitchell Robinson, RJ Barrett signing deals this past offseason. That's a sign of stability and strong drafting. And we know about the players they've picked up in the last couple of drafts. Certainly, though, CP, you know, your point is well taken in terms of you want these young players obviously to grow in your own building and to develop a strong young nucleus, but you also want the league to be high on these guys. And you know, maybe with Utah, they weren't as high on some of the Knicks young guys as the Knicks were. You know, clearly they wanted RJ Barrett. Clearly they wanted
Quentin Grimes, and I think there were iterations of deals where they wanted Toppin, Grimes, and Quickley and other stuff. But so I think that they appreciated the value of those players, but maybe the Knicks overvalued them. So that speaks to asset management, and it speaks to, again, the idea that in a perfect world, your front office, your coaching staff, everybody's rowing in the same direction. So if you say, hey, you know, I know the player X, the young guy, hasn't looked great in practice, but we want other teams to see him. We want people around the league to be excited about him because we may try to move him. Can you give him some minutes? That's when it benefits both the front office and the coaching staff to be on the same page, because you can coordinate like that and you can increase a player's value. And I think there was, in some instances, there was a lack of coordination around the Knicks' young players and Tom Thibodeau in the front office.
Well, there's no question, man. They have a lot of questions to answer. And looking forward to training camp, man. September 27th, we are right there. Ian, but we always appreciate the time you're giving us, man. The hardest working man in New York sports, no question about it. Ian Bagley, definitely appreciate it. Go ahead, JD.
Yeah, can I ask you one more question, Ian? Because I need to know. I need to know this.
Let's go.
Yes, JD.
ESPN reported this.
Yeah.
I don't know what your reporting tells you, but is it true that the Knicks offered RJ the three picks unprotected? What was it? Was it Obi?
IQ.
Was it IQ?
Yeah.
I think it was RJ, Obi, and
Mitch. Oh, that original report. That original report. Okay, yeah,
That report came out as soon as the Donovan Mitchell trade happened. I think it was Woj. I could be wrong. That reported that was one of the offers at the beginning of the trade discussions. Is there any reporting to you that tells you that that was in fact true?
Right. So I'm never going to question, just knowing my industry, I'm never going to question Woj's reporting. What I had heard way back in early July, when things start to bubble up a little bit, was that Utah had asked for Mitchell Robinson, RJ Barrett, Quentin Grimes, and at least another young player, and then at least three first round picks. And the Knicks, to my knowledge, the overarching consensus was we don't want to do it. I think there were some people at that time, at least I know there were some people at that time, were saying, let's do it. I mean, let's get this done. So I certainly, again, not going to question Woj's reporting. I think sometimes, though, with like reporting on trade talks, and it depends on who's talking. Was it a idea? Was it a framework? Was it a hard offer? I think there are different kind of levels, so to speak, on these trade talks, and when there's a hard offer, or when it's just kind of just a conversation bending about ideas. But I do know that Utah had asked about a package like that, and the ultimate consensus from the Knicks was it was too much, but there were people, you know, within the organization that supported the idea of getting it done and getting Donovan Mitchell here.
Ian Bagley, like I said, man, the hardest working man in New York. Ian, Jose Morales said, Ian Bagley is always good at Dykeman. So they said you certified around the city.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, I used to cover Dykeman when I was a young reporter covering high school basketball. So my best memories up there, Kenny Stevens and everybody up there, man. I appreciate that, Mr. Morales.
Absolutely, man. Shout out Kenny Stevens and the good people at Dykeman. Ian, thanks again for the time. We always appreciate it. And looking forward to many more this season, man. Thanks again.
Great to be with you guys, fellas. Everybody have a good night.
All right, you too, man. That was Ian Bagley of SNY. Salute to everybody in the chat once again. Hit that thumbs up button for you boys. We're giving you sharp intel, man. This is Knicks Fan TV, number one show for the fans by the fans. They don't do this anywhere else. You had fans calling in asking Ian questions. Ian giving us the lowdown on the Mitchell trade. We're putting the Mitchell trade to bed. I know everybody's tired of talking about it. We're moving forward. We're turning the page. We're a new chapter, all right? A new chapter in Knicks Fan TV history. That's it, fellas. I'm over it. I'm done with it, man.
I had to ask him that last question to cap it off, because I needed to know. You know, there was a lot of talk about what people thought about that offer and what that means, you know, stuff about the Knicks front office, et cetera. So I had to cap it off with that question. So good way to end that segment with Ian.
Yeah, no question. No question, man. And, I mean, thank God that was never made. But even the last one. You know, if we're talking, first of all, it really shocked me to know that RJ was really really in this deal. I mean, a lot of fans are like, RJ was never in this deal. This was all a ploy. No.
Man.
They were ready to ship my man off.
From the get-go.
From the get-go.
It's not, you see how some trades, they slowly go
right.
into, like, you start off a certain way, and then you're like, all right, we'll give him to you.
Right.
Like, from the get-go, he was on the
right.
table.
But let me ask you guys this question.
Yeah.
Are you guys comfortable with this front office right now? After, because we were here, we did the whole live breakdown of the trade happening, Mitchell going to Cleveland, but after that, it's like an atomic bomb drop. The shrapnel just spread all over the land. And we get all these reports. You know, JD's talking about the Woj tweet with Mitchell Robinson, RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, 3 unprotected picks. Okay, we're seeing RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickly, 2 unprotected picks, a total of 5.
Right, right.
All this stuff with Evan and Evan Fournier.
They would have had to put a pick on to trade Fournier too.
That's what I'm saying. And so you see all these iterations. Are you comfortable with the front office? Because me right now, like, I'm a little skeptical on how they just did this whole trade negotiation. Usually, as JD pointed out, you have a line in the sand. Like, RJ Barrett is the most valuable young player that we have. 3rd overall pick from the 2019 draft. That is, from the get-go, that should not even happen. There's got to be a limit saying, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to trade my best player that we drafted so far that's in-house, that wants to be a New York Knicks, that has the mentality to be a good player in New York. And then in turn, the holdup, when it came down to it, was the 3rd unprotected pick being a top 5 protection in 2029.
Yeah.
I think it was like 25, 27, the 29 draft pick that they got from Cleveland. Let's just say it's the 29 draft pick. They worry about that being a top 5 protection? I'm questioning how we're doing negotiations here. Truly questioning what this front office is doing. How are you guys feeling?
I always felt like, number one, I never want to trade RJ in a Mitchell trade. But I was surprised that they were not only offering him, but still the 3 picks or the 2 picks. Whatever's protected don't even matter. That's a lot. That is a lot. And so if that was really their mindset to do that, they're looking funny in the light, man. You know, I can't defend my brothers over there at CAA. For 2 months longer. Then you bring in Rosas into the mix. Again, I don't have all the understandings of a front office inner workings, but to say that the guy just got in here and he's the guy on the phones. You got Wes, you got Perry, I don't know, man. I just feel like once this thing is all over, you're gonna get the Bondi report on how much chaos and dysfunction was going on in that place. You know what's coming. He's got it fresh on the typewriter. He's ready to print it out and hit send, all right, by 2025. It's just a lot, man. It's a lot. But you know, to your point, do we have faith in them? Look, they've gotten value out of some of their picks. The OB Randall thing to me is still a disaster. I don't care what anybody says. And they still have more work to do. Brunson, good pickup. We'll see how he helps the team. I think they're stuck in no man's land right now. You could always say, yeah, there's always a next guy. Yeah, there's a next guy. But as you saw with Cleveland, there's competition. Never be overconfident, man. Never be overconfident. There's always competition out there. Good.
And that's my
You can go ahead. You was going to say that was your point.
No, and that's like being overconfident. It's like just adding on to the whole fuel to the fire of like, well, what is this front office doing? If you have Rosas, right, how many voices do we need to make a deal? Like if you got Rosas, you got Worldwide West, you got Leon Rose, you got Tibbs, you got Brock Oller, you got Scott Perry, you got Walt Perrin. When is it too much that we actually say, you know what, maybe we could tone back on everyone who has a say, because that at some point there's just too many voices and you can't really get a deal done. Now, what were you going to say, JD?
No, and I was going to say, I would think Scott Perry would probably be, because, you know, Leon came in and keep Scott Perry.
Right.
So, you know, what would be his role? But, and you know, this whole thing is interesting because sometimes I think, you know, if you even look at the reporting, it always seemed like Shams' reporting was more towards Danny Ainge's side, maybe Danny Ainge, you know, side of sources, and then the Woj with the Knicks, you know, because right. if you look at that night when it was all Knicks news, Shams was chilling. It
yeah,
was all
yeah.
Woj went on a tweet.
Woj is ripping and running. Yeah.
So I'm like, where did he get that info? And then so and then after the Donovan move, notice how that offer was reported. Notice how the Knicks Twitter started to get active with yeah. RJ.
Oh, right away, bro. The PR machine does not skip a beat. They had that thing ready to hit send. As soon as the Mitchell trade got announced, they hit send on that thing. Go ahead.
Right. And no, and sometimes I think maybe even if they knew they would be criticized, maybe they didn't care and they wanted to leak that offer just so it could look like, look, I know y'all might not like this, but we tried to get him and it didn't work out. And you know, my last thing, even with that trade, I always felt the Knicks, even the picks were more valuable because I know that that Utah Jazz got picks in the future and anything can happen. But even that far out in the future, how much value would those picks actually have when the Cavs team still has a young nucleus,
right.
even if Mitchell decides to leave?
That's right.
They've locked up Jared Allen. They're not letting Evan Mobley get out of there. They've
right.
locked up Darius Garland. They have a nucleus as it is, yeah. whereas you would think, CP and Alex, you would think that Ainge would want the Knicks pick because if we're looking at some of those offers, Mitchell comes here, we're depleted of assets,
star.
We're depleted of more picks, we don't have another star, RJ's not here. There was going to be questions even if Mitchell was here. So you would
yeah.
think that even if you get the next year's pick, how high – is that like is that are the Knicks expected to win 53 games, 55 games? So I think even the picks, when you really look at where Mitchell was heading and the actual teams, is more valuable on the Knicks side. As far as the front office, man, I don't know, man. Because I mean, one of the things I took away from Ian is the whole Reddish thing. I know it could be a minor thing, but it still shows you the way that this front office is managing the whole situation where. There's a good chance now that Reddish could be on this roster opening night, and yet there's a good chance you still don't have a plan for him. And this is not about, well, Reddish is not that good, and people have different opinions, but you made an investment in him.
Yeah.
You made an investment in him, and it was reported as soon as he was traded that the plan was to get him here to play him, yet your head coach is not a fan of him. So there's just – it's. There can't be, we can't start a whole new year, a whole new season, and still have the same questions about whether the head coach and the front office are seeing eye to eye. To me, if we're going into opening night and we're still having those questions, that is going to tell me that this front office still has a lot to prove to me
yeah.
that they are, you know, here for the interest of the team long term than just trying to, you know, get an immediate start. Because now I look at this and CP, they have pressure now because their intentions were clear. They're trying to get a star here. When you offer RJ from the very beginning of negotiations and he was your number three pick and you offering, you know, picks and all that stuff, that tells me they are here to get a star.
Yeah, no question.
And when SGA or whoever, Devin Booker, whoever, I just wonder – at that point, they're going to have pressure to make a move.
They're
going to
pull
you know who else knows they got pressure? Whoever trades with the Knicks.
That's a fact.
You don't think the league now knows
back against the wall, man.
That there's pressure on this front office? They're
yeah.
going to try. We're talking about a New York tax. That's going to be times two
100%.
The next time that a star is available at the trade
yeah.
market.
100%.
And that's why.
Good.
And that's why when Ian said, like, it's learning on the job for some of these front office members because they haven't done this before. This is where you're starting to question, like, yeah, I understand that you can learn from this. This is where you also got to pull back how many voices are in the room. And someone said in the chat that I want Dolan to come back out. No, I'm not asking for Dolan to come back out. I'm asking for everyone to get on the same page.
Right.
That's all I'm asking for. Get on the same page. We can't have 20 million different voices saying, let's go do everything we can for Donovan Mitchell. No. We got to keep R.J. Barrett. Oh, we should trade Quentin Grimes and Emmanuel Quickly. No. Tibbs wants Quentin Grimes, but we can get rid of Obi Toppin, though. It's just too much. There's no
yeah.
one on the same path. And then when you go into negotiations and you don't have a plan laid out, I don't care what line – like every line of business, you're working with some sort of negotiation, right? Say, like, you're ordering from your favorite online delivery app, right? And they mess up your order. You talk to customer service. They're like, yeah, we'll give you the 10%, $10. You say no, all right? you start going back and forth. That's a negotiation. They call on their manager. You know, this is where you start working your way up, where they have like the whole Rosas, you know, the front line before you get all the way up to the exec. This is where you start doing like, let's actually have a plan out saying this is what we're going to offer first. Then this is the next step if it gets this far. And if it gets really far, we know plan C. It doesn't seem like they had a plan A, a plan B, or a plan C. It was just like, let's throw everything against the wall and let's figure it out from there.
I think, and salute to everybody in the chat once again. Hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Knicks Weekly presented by Manscaped, CP the Franchise, Alex Rattaro, City Sports Talk in the building. Share this video, people in the chat, man. Share this video for us right now on Twitter. We just had Ian Begley come through and drop some gems on us. Share these videos on Twitter right now. Let the people know number one show for the fans by the fans is active right now. We are getting ready for training camp. And we kind of seamlessly segued into our training camp burning questions because, to me, that's number one. It starts at the top. Is the organization going to be on the same page, as JD and Alex said, in terms of the direction of this team? I think it's normal for any organization, for any business, for any family to have differing opinions. But at the end of the day, you still have to walk as one, meaning the product on the court, the future, the direction, how you shape this team has to be unified at the end of the day. But the Reddish situation shows that there's a disconnect. And you brought it into your operations. You brought in a kid, you paid a pick for him, and you have no plan for him. No path in your rotation, low trade market. He wants more playing time, disconnect. You drafted Obi with the number 8 pick. You had Julius on the trading block for the last 2 years. He had the aberration year. You signed him to the max contract. Now you kind of start to see, now you got to figure out how to rebuild his trade value while you have your other asset languishing on the bench and his clock is ticking. You got to pay the kid eventually or decide how much is he worth to this team. So it's just, you know, that kind of disconnect. Again, the wing rotation. Is Fournier going to be a starter when you talk to all this stuff about Grimes? Grimes was supposed to be the guy who was the sticking point in the trade negotiations. He fits better in the starting lineup. He's your future. Where are you going to go with that? And I've seen, when I mean the coach, because that was another layer of disconnect. You bring in a coach who wants to win. He wants to win. Remember when Berman came on the show? And Berman was talking about how Van Gundy and Tibbs are kind of cut from the same cloth and that they have no patience for long-term development. Not to say that they don't develop players, but long-term, they're trying to win. They understand the pressures of winning in New York. So now here it is. You have the coach that's like, well, we can't wait to get these players. We got to get them. But you're not really ready. And so it's just chaotic, man. It's just chaotic right now. They've got to get on the same page, no question about it.
And I think we're going to find out very early if they are on the same page, because, you know, one of the most anticipated things of training camp is going to be, you know, that first press conference with Tibbs, trying to dissect what his mindset is, how he, and I'm pretty sure that's going to be one of the first questions asked in terms of how he's going to manage the roster and some of the players. We're going to look at preseason, and then we're going to look at the first few games of the season to see, you know, where is Tibbs going to lie? Because one of the things Ian said is at the end of the day, Tibbs is going to have the last answer.
That's right.
You know, Tibbs is going to have the last answer on some of these decisions. And I would think, you know, more so maybe even this season than last season, because the front office may feel like, okay, we did enough to get off your back. We got some of the veterans out of here. Maybe not all of them, but enough to let you now make your decisions, and then we'll see what Tibbs does with that, you know, ability to make the decision. So it's we're going to find out early, because again, Reddish in a contract year, if he's here, he's not getting burned. What do you do? Because I mean, I'm pretty sure at some point with the business is going to get Kenny. He's probably going to be one out of here by trade deadline. And then again, the Randall Obi thing, it's a big deal. Does Rose get more minutes than IQ? I understand that they click together as a second unit backcourt, but, you know, Rose is here on a one-year contract. So, yes, you can play them together, but will you know, with Jalen Brunson, you think is going to take 32, 33 minutes, and Quentin Grimes and RJ manning up the two-guard position in combination. Where does that leave IQ with Rose in, you know, in a year that a coach wants to win? I know we like to do the 2K lineups and we like to go the starting five,
right,
and then the backup starting five as if that's exactly how it goes down.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be interesting. So I think we're going to find out early, and that's going to be one of the telltale signs of how the season's going to go.
Absolutely. Let me shout out some of the super chats that have come in. Salute to all the people in the chat, man. Hit that thumbs up button for you boys. I want to shout out Sun from Brooklyn. He says, CP, you done know the Knicks need to play to their young guys. Let's move forward in building the team the right way. All right, Al. So it looks like someone from Brooklyn is repping Jamaica. He was probably out there in the Parkway for Labor Day. So shout out to everybody, all my Caribbeans in the chat, man. Throw your flags in the chat. Let us know where you guys are repping from. Throw your countries in the chat, your cities in the chat. Let us know where you guys are checking in from. Lord Barker Rock, shooting your $10 super chat, says the Mitchell trade saga got you guys going grazing your beard. Manscaped and Just for Men will take care of that for you. Big up Clyde on his Hall of Fame announcer, man. No, it's not the Knicks that do that to you, man. It's women. It's women. Women put the grazer there, my guy Lloyd Barker Rock, man. It's just only a matter of time. All you young guys out there, you red pill guys and all that stuff, wait till you get older, man. It's nothing but downhill. But definitely appreciate the super chat. We got Jay from Florida, Russell Reed, repping Jamaica. Jay, what's going on? I think Papa Left is in Jamaica, too. Shout out to Val M. Rayology. Jamaica's in here heavy. I don't know why I don't know why Nightbot is blocking out those comments. We got some DRs in here. Shout out 27, JD. Who else? We got Edwin P. repping Haiti. King Core, Jamaica in the building. Okay. Salute, man. HP Carlos repping Portugal. And as my guy Lloyd Barker Rock mentioned, Manscaped, fellas, you know the deal, man. It is fall. And it is still Manscaped season, man. Get it right. Get it tight. Go to manscaped.com. Enter promo code KFTV for 20% off plus free shipping. And like I said, the Lawnmower 4.0 will get you right, but they have a number of great products for men. And you guys got to try out the Platinum Package, man. It's a package that comes with the Lawnmower 4.0 and several other Manscaping products in a travel bag. You get the body spray. They have the shampoo and the conditioner and the body wash. Been telling you guys about that as well. You have the Manscaped deodorant, man. They got everything. Deodorant. You have the ball deodorant. All right. Don't be bashful over there, fellas. Sometimes you need that. You know, you leave in the office. You don't got time to go home and get fresh. Slap on that ball deodorant and get you right before you go out on that date. And then you have the reviver, man. A little ball toner. Get fresh before you step outside. You know what I'm saying? JD, Alex, how you guys looking on your supply, man? You guys need to re-up. All I got to do is talk to the plug, man. Just let me know.
But definitely going to have to hook me up for the win. So,
all right, I got you, bro.
It's already getting a little chilly. So.
Yeah, I got you, man. No worries.
No testimonials.
Just go out there and get it, man. So we talked about, going into training camp, some of the questions, right? We talked about, you know, the organization being on the same page. Obviously, the Cam situation is sticking out like a sore thumb. The wing rotation, Cam, Fournier, Grimes. How about RJ? Mm. You know, how about RJ? You just signed him to a four-year deal, $120 million. The offense has traditionally or typically gone through Julius Randle via, you know, his own skill sets in the aberration year, and also a lack of a point guard, true point guard. And now you brought in Brunson. Will the offense continue to go through RJ? Will it be shared? Will it go to Julius? Will it go to Brunson? I think that's a valid question, man. Al, kick us off. What do you think about that?
I know RJ's got the largest contract between all those guys, so we should say yes. But at the same time, both him and Randall have incentives in those contracts where they got to be making all-stars. They got to be averaging certain points, you know, throughout the season. They have all these things to continuously increase the value of their contract, right? So I don't see it just outright going through RJ because I'm going to think that Julius still wants to get his and make sure that he hits on his contract as well. Now, it should be RJ's team because, one, we see that the league runs through the guards and the wings, so it only makes sense. But knowing this team and how we've seen it over the past couple of seasons, especially when we drafted RJ, you would have thought that he would have gotten more touches then as a rookie, but we still ran it through Julius. We understand why Julius got it more so the second year. He was the second All-NBA team, All-Star, whatnot. I get it. Last season, we had RJ in the corner for points of the season. You would think that now he would get that shot. He should. I'm still hesitant to be thinking that that's going to happen. He should, but I'm still hesitant because I look at who the head coach is, and I look at how this roster is still constructed. If Evan Fournier does start, although I don't think it will happen, I think it will be Grimes because he's a better player to put off ball. I think RJ will get a decent amount of touches, although you still got Brunson in there too. He got paid.
Yeah.
He's got to make sure that he earns his contract too. So between him, Randall, and RJ, and I'm not really worried about Brunson because he's shown that he can play off ball because he played next to Luka, one of the highest usage players in the NBA. But it's Randall, a high usage player that demanded the ball in his hands most of the time. Cut back Randall's share of the offense so that RJ can get in there? I would hope so. But those are questions, you know, the head coach has to decide.
JD.
It's going to be interesting, especially now because, you know, again, I go back to, you know, they were willing to get him out of here. And so you wonder where they view him as, you know, an option, as a fit, as a role in the offense now. And then you couple that with the fact that don't you think RJ wants to be the number one option now? Because you got to believe that now, you know, he's internally extra motivated because I know he's going to say the right things and I know the Knicks are going to say the right things. But at the end of the day, these players, especially this generation of players, they take everything personal. And so, you know, I'm pretty sure RJ is going to want to prove that, you know, the Knicks even made a mistake, you know, trying to, you know, put him in trade negotiations. So I think I would want it to be him and Brunson as option one and two. Because just because I think, again, the one thing I don't want to forget and I don't want this team to dismiss and to just leave out about RJ's abilities. Yes, he still has a lot of improvements that need to be made. He has to finish better at the basket. He has to shoot a few more percentage points from the free throw line. Has to be a little bit more efficient. But the one thing that he has right now is he can be a very good playmaker, especially off the pick and roll. You saw a lot of times with Mitchell Robinson, he played a good two-man game. He can be a good playmaker. So we need to utilize that. And I think you can create an actual dynamic too, because Jalen Brunson doesn't even need a pick to create a shot or to, you know, to get to the basket because of his footwork and his ability to break a defender down one-on-one. So I would like some type of offense created between him and Barrett where they're both featured possession to possession. And then Julius comes in as that, you know, third option, maybe some off-ball action, even though that's not his strength. That's how I would look at it. But I honestly think that's one of the biggest burning questions of training camp. That's why we have that here as number two, because it's going to be something to watch.
No question. And you guys hit it out the park. And it's so interesting because you have these, you know, conflicting dynamics here where Brunson came in. Yes, he claims it was family. Obviously, he got the bag, but he did want a expanded role. He wants the ball in his hands. He wants to be the floor general. And rightfully so, because with the ball in his hands, he can make things happen. And we talk about his prowess in the mid-range, his prowess finishing at the rim, getting to the rim. I mean, that alone is going to help this team, you know, when you're watching them on the court. But then it turns your two more inefficient shooters into more supporting roles, catch-and-shoot situations, where, you know, in RJ's case, his numbers had dipped from 2 years ago. And from Julius's case, his numbers dipped off a cliff from 2 years ago. So it's very
clunky,
interesting. CP. It's clunky because both of those guys have shown that they really need the ball in their hand to really generate offense. But nevertheless, I still think you have to utilize RJ's size, his capabilities of getting to the rack. He's been drawing he was able to draw more contact last year. And he was pretty clutch last year. I mean, remember the Lakers game in crunch time, dunking on Anthony Davis, the three-pointer to put the game into overtime, the Celtics game, the buzzer beater.
Remember, helped them win the finals.
Right, that's it. RJ jump-started the Celtics season. Clutch. The game in New Orleans. How many clutch buckets did we see RJ have in that fourth quarter where he literally took over the game? Game against the Hawks, game against the Heat. I mean, he showed some pretty, pretty clutch genes, especially as the season wore on. And I want to see some more of that, man. And like you guys said, he clearly wants to be that guy. I think, yeah, it will be, you know, kind of split. I think Brunson will certainly have his opportunities, and they will have to sacrifice for each other. But I think RJ has to kind of assume that role. You know, I think he's got to assume that role, because then if he's getting there, if he's getting to the line, if he's efficient on his drives, then you have Brunson there who can play off. Hopefully it's Grimes there who can play off. And all you got to hope is it's Julius being able to play off. Hopefully it's Obi, but if it's Julius there, you hope he can, provide some efficiency from the field and help with the spacing a little bit.
And that comes with a head coach that holds his players accountable, right? And I'm talking more so towards Julius, because we've seen Julius leave guys open to get into put his own blinders on, try to back guys down from the three-point arc, right? Going all the way down to the paint, trying to create something, which is just inefficient basketball. So Tibbs has to figure out a way to rein Julius in, to get him to play within himself like he did 2 seasons ago, to help the entire team. And that should be the goal for Julius to come in here. If he's going to be part of this team, is to help the entire team, right? I don't know about you guys, but I've been watching the Captain documentary about Derek Jeter. And, you know, you listen to Derek Jeter and you hear him talk about sacrificing for the betterment of the team, right? Always putting the team first. And last year, we didn't really see that with Julius. We saw a lot of him trying to get his. If he can figure out how to play along with everybody, right? Just play like in a system, organize, find the guy who's open and not force a lot of shots.
Yep.
You know, then we're going to see a better offense. But that comes back to the head coach being able to hold everyone accountable, and more so Randall than everyone else.
And it's clunky because of the fact that, you know, you can go one way and go RJ as a focal point with Brunson. And then the question is going to be, what about Julius? Julius is not a strong off-ball player. But then now if you switch it up and you go, okay, let's feature Randall with Brunson, I don't think, you know, RJ Barrett signed $100 million to now stand on the corner and just shoot corner three.
Right.
Mind you, we still technically don't know if this is his strength, because when you have a player that had a strong season from the three-point line and then not a so strong season from the three-point line, there's still some balancing left. There's still some seasons left to determine if this is going to be something that's going to be a strength or not.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, you know, this is why this whole, even without Donovan Mitchell here, there's still a lot of, you know, questions that are going to be need to answer, you know, in training camp this season.
Let's break this up and take some calls. So to everybody in the chat, once again, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Let's go to North Dakota. Marshall, how you feeling, bro?
I'm all right, brother. How are you?
Good, man. Been a long time, man.
Yeah, it's been too long.
Yeah.
But I just got like a general comment to make, and I don't know. Tell me I'm wrong. Uh-huh. You know, but this is my thought. When is this Knicks organization going to start treating this organization like a top five Forbes most valuable sports teams in the world? You know what I mean? Because every other top tier sports team knows what to do, or they have an idea of being able to throw money into the team. And like you guys said, the front office, you know, is being clunky and things of that nature. But I'm getting irritated that the Knicks aren't putting their money where their mouth is as far as a sports team that's valuable around the world. Last year on the Forbes list, they were, what, number three? And then this year they dropped to number five.
Yeah.
And so say what you want about the Lakers and everything like that. They threw money at the team. If they saw a problem with the coach, they ran through coaches until they could find the perfect mix. Same thing. Same with what you want about Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. He knows that to improve the product of the star, you got to throw money at it. You got to make the hard sacrifices and the cuts and everything to try to bring the fans and everything back. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
same thing with the Real.
Appreciate the call, Marshall. Appreciate the call. The thing is that, you know, basketball doesn't really work. I mean, it's not like baseball where you could throw money at it, right? Like people say, like the Yankees, throw money at it, like when the boss was alive, you know, go get all these guys. In basketball, you got to deal with the cap. What you have to do is make sound decisions. And when Ian was on here, I mentioned two things that set this team back. You want to talk about the price of Donovan Mitchell? He's free if you just go draft him. You go draft Frank. Yeah, all right, you guys want to say he's helping the Mavs out, whatever the case may be. He's never going to be a great player. Put it that way. Point blank, period. Kev, hope the best for the kid. He's not here. You have two draft picks that aren't even here. So not only did they not help you win games or elevate your team, they didn't even get you any assets in return. Okay, well, okay, you got Cam. Now you mismanaged that in terms of Kev. But I'm saying they didn't help get you really move the needle for this organization. So it's a combination between bad luck and bad decision-making. One thing you could say about the Lakers, they always seem to get their guy, but even when they went through that lean time, they drafted Randle, they drafted Lonzo, they drafted Brandon Ingram, they drafted Josh Hart. They had enough to go get Anthony Davis. LeBron wanted to sign with him. That's part luck, part good drafting, and being in the right place at the right time. Some of it is luck. Some of it is decision-making. And Fells, well, what do you think? Jump in.
Comes down to how you said, CB, how you draft. I mean, we look at the Cavaliers, right? They still have a solid roster. They got Garland. You got Mobley. I mean, they were able to trade for Jared Allen because the Nets just decided to blow up everything to go after Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. But even still, they were able to make smart trades, draft well. They traded Colin Sexton. You know, they were able to pick up Lauri Markkanen. But still, they had enough young players who are considered valuable in this league because they've seen enough of them play that you could say, okay, I know what these guys are. Watch Danny Ainge take Colin Sexton on that nice contract, have him score 30 points per game this season out in Utah because there's not going to be anybody else once they're done shipping everybody off, and then flip him again because someone's like, I need an instant scorer off the bench, and they'll trade a first-round pick to go get Colin Sexton.
Yeah.
And that's how it's going to work.
The Cavs, since they drafted LeBron the first time, the Cavs damn near rebuilt their team three times. What the hell have we been doing since 2007, bro? Nothing.
They've been getting their hands on a bunch of top picks.
Nothing. Right?
Remember they got Kyrie Irving?
Yeah.
Then they got Andrew Wiggins and they traded him. Anthony Bennett. Mobley, Garland, it's like...
Bro, they rebuilt their team three times since 2007. Literally got rid of packages of gum and nothing to go get Donovan Mitchell and bring him here with three all-stars, Mobley being the third potential. Part luck, part, you know... Part
and they also
drafting.
Went through terrible coaching. I mean, who was... Yeah. Beeline was out there.
Yeah, oh, man. I completely forgot about that stint.
He was out there.
Yeah.
I mean, he made his comment and then got axed. So, but, they got rid of Ty Lue. They got rid of Beeline. You know, J.B. Bickerstaff has been showing some promise as a head coach, so they started to create, like, some sort of foundation. The Cavs were able to strike when the iron's hot, looking at teams that were mismanaging themselves. Look, they were able to get into that deal with James Harden to get Jared Allen, and even though Caris LeVert went to the Pacers, they still figured out to get Caris LeVert on that team and have him coming off the bench.
Yeah.
You know, that smart front office is just knowing how to, like, draft and knowing to say, all right, let me go pick up this player and figure out how we can use him in here or flip him down the line.
Yeah.
The Knicks haven't been able to do that. I mean, we've drafted Clay Anthony early. We've had Frank Ntilikina. We've had Kevin Knox.
Jordan Hill. You know,
oh, man.
You know, Donnie Walsh did all that to get from under Isaiah's Knox, and then he goes out and drafts Jordan Hill, who he thought was going to be the next Amari. Like, come on, man. Like, it's stuff right. like that.
That's what makes it funny about this front office, too, is in terms of what they've done so far, you would think that you would want to rebuild, like, just all the way, not like with a mix and try to win, like, all the way, because – you know, if you're in the late 20s and you're picking up a Quentin Grimes who the Utah Jazz wanted, and they got their own Quentin Grimes in Agbaji from the Cavs, right? Like, so they seem to value that type of player. And you know, you're getting Jericho Sims in the late second round, and he looks to be a potential future nice rotational piece. You know, the Deuce, everybody that they've drafted so far, IQ. Like, these are solid players for where they were drafted.
Right. Good value.
So, and then when you even look at the players that they were interested in that they couldn't get, they tried to get Chris Duarte. Well, Chris Duarte has turned out into a solid player, right? So even at the players that they've had interest in, we'll see what Jaden Ivey turns out to be.
Trey Murphy.
Murphy has turned out to be a very nice piece with the Pelicans. Like, even the players that has been reported that they tried to get have turned out so far to be good future NBA players. So I wonder what they could do if we were to get, you know, a top lottery pick, because the Cavs have built this team, but they were in that position.
Yep.
And so you would think, you know, that's been their one biggest noticeable strength so far. I'm just surprised that they're not relying on that, and they kind of wanted to immediately do a win now move, which, you know, could have backfired based on some of the reports of the offers that they were willing to make.
Willing to part with, man. So to everybody in the chat, once again, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Back to the phones we go. Let's talk to MBIC. MBIC, what's going on?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
How you doing, man?
So I think I'm hearing a lot of people speaking about Rose. I don't know if people know too much about him. I mean, he's an attorney, so he moves a different way. If you look at how I've been paying attention to what he's doing, you got to understand, I think Randall's on the move. Why? Because his first draft pick was Obi. So Obi has been buried, so he doesn't have that many minutes. So I'm thinking that he would get rid of Randall so he can get Obi some burn. And I believe that in the next 2 years, we're going to go off the ball.
Who, Lonzo? LaMelo?
Yeah, LaMelo.
Okay.
Because you got to set up.
Yeah, but LaMelo's going to get a bag. He's going to get his rookie extension. You know, you're looking at him.
What if he doesn't want to? Yeah, what if he doesn't want to be there? You're talking about what he wants to be.
I mean, who knows? Maybe the Pops does try to get him up out of there, but I would think it's not before he gets paid.
Oh, yeah, he'll get paid in New York. I mean, would you rather be in Charlotte? Look at what Charlotte's going through. If they don't get it together, Michael Jordan is their guy. Like, I mean, do you really think that he's going to want to stay there rather than being on a big stage?
Again, certainly possible, and appreciate the call, man. I just feel like LaMelo's the type of guy who would get the full rookie max, the 5 years, the 190, whatever it's going to be when it's his time. And then maybe a year after that, you know, the Pops goes on his media tour, starts trashing MJ, airs out the dirty laundry, and tries to stick him up and walk out the back door.
Sometimes I wish we'd just get a star, because when we don't, we start looking at.
Oh, we're wishing for everybody, bro. We're wishing for everybody, bro.
Devin Booker.
Yeah.
You know, Bronny James.
Yeah.
We're going to tank for him.
I'm done, man. I need a break.
It's like.
Even after the Mitchell trade, people are still sending me trade machine screenshots.
I mean, how many players do we say, you know, seriously, how many players have we said the same thing? Well, if he comes to New York,
yeah.
You know, endorsement deals, he wouldn't want to come here. It's like, bro, we've been doing that for how long?
Yeah, we
and
don't
nobody
get anybody,
comes
bro.
Here.
We don't get anybody, bro. They flipped Porzingis for a 2-max contract dream and had no guarantees. Had no guarantees.
Look what's happening in Charlotte. Look what's happening here. We don't even know who's going to start, who's going to play.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, we got to figure it out to do ourselves before, you know, we start looking at players 2-3 years down the line, man. I'm just ready to rock with this team and see what we're going to do, man.
Absolutely, man. I see some people on the Discord. Jan, we'll get to you. I see Dark Horse. I see Zay. We'll get to you guys in a minute. Back to the phones. Let's go to Brutus from BK. Brutus, what's going on?
Yo, what's up? That's the BX, bro. What's happening, CP, JD, BX. Alex, man? How you guys
going on,
doing?
Brutus?
Good, man. How you feeling?
Yo, and this is the way I see it. I see this is a team that's in real, like you said, no man's land. And if that's the case, then I would always have to go talent over fit when your team is devoid of talent, okay? And we have a possible very talented kid in our midst that by some of the accounts and what you were saying, like some of the misses that we've had on some of our own draft picks, the front office actually did something a little bit smart and went out there and picked up a Cam Reddish, right, who was the number 10 pick, in the same draft with R.J. Barrett. And why is it that they can't play together? Why can't R.J. go to back to his natural two, where mm-hmm. I think he's more of a beast at, where he has more power and strength over a lot of guys he'll play against, and put Cam at the three and play that two long-winged, you know, ball like the rest of the NBA? At least he should get a fair and true competition through training camp and preseason. It should not be this predetermined thing about Grimes, because it really doesn't make it make sense. We was about to trade for Donovan Mitchell, and I know we're past all of that trade, but we was about to trade for a shooting guard. So how does Quentin Grimes, you know, they valued Quentin Grimes that much higher that they didn't want to move him for the shooting guard? They wanted to have them both. What sense does that make? Now you have a glutton again at that same spot over a guy that you're thinking is this, that, or the other. It make it make sense. All I'm saying is that you got a guy like Cam, put them in the camp, mano y mano, best man wins.
Cam high.
You can't have this coach, you know what I'm saying? You can't have this coach, you know, doing this to the team. See, and about the ball handling and all that. Any good coach could figure out how to get all his guys to eat, right? Like, everything is done by analytics nowadays, right? So what you would do is you would take the teams that a particular player plays best against, right, and let him be the feature player that game, right? And let's say RJ eats against the Celtics, all right? So RJ's the feature against the Celtics. Jay Brunson could eat against the Hawks, okay? Brunson is your show tonight. You know what I'm saying? As well as, of course, working everybody else in the way they need to so that you could play an NBA brand of basketball. But all of this calling this guy the one, that guy the one, when none of these guys are stars yet, right? None of these guys. We know this. So
appreciate the call, man. Brutus from the BX. Hey, I'd like to nominate that call for a vote in the chat, people. Vote that call in the chat. One being trash, five being facts. I think that might have been call of the night, man. Maybe the Cam Hive, if you're in here, let us know. I think the Cam Hive was really feeling that call, man. I know that really.
You're part of the Cam Hive now, aren't you? So were you feeling that call?
Maybe that was just one night he was part
of
the
Cam Hive. Yeah, yeah.
He flip-flops.
Oh, man.
Now I'm Cam Hive, man. But like I said, I just don't see the path unless Fournier's traded. Because as Brutus said, make it make sense. It's the coach. It's the coach and the decisions that were made. You invested money in Fournier. You invested money in Randall. You got Obi there. The coach likes Grimes. You drafted Grimes. You got Cam on a bargain basement deal. And you still can't find a way. Like I said, I think the ultimate fate for Cam is I think they trade him, and I think they go get his replacement in the draft, reset the rookie contract. You don't got to worry about paying nobody. I think that's how it goes down.
I mean, it makes sense at this point. They burned an opportunity where they should have started the evaluation process last season before you had come to the final year of his deal. So
I don't get it. I don't get this thinking.
I don't get it. I don't. Like, if Spoelstra was the coach here, he's not worried about Fournier's contract because he wasn't worrying about Duncan Robinson's 5 years, $90 million. So, and I just think I look at it, and at this point, the league knows Fournier's value. I mean, Fournier had his best shooting month, I believe, in January. He shot like 46% from three, and we still couldn't trade him. And we're still talking about you got to give up an asset to get off of Fournier.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at this point, are you really decreasing his value if he's not even in the rotation? For example, let's say he's not even in the rotation. Are you really decreasing his value, a veteran that you know what you're going to get at this point? It's not like he's 26, you know?
No.
So, and when you even – if you even want to compare with the potential return, there's a higher upside to even getting a return of an asset for Cam by the deadline than it is from Fournier.
Yeah.
Because even if Fournier plays well, that still does not mean that you may not have to give up an asset to get off of his contract. Because if you look at it, just look at this offseason. Fournier hasn't been in any other talks but the Donovan Mitchell trade, and it was only because of salary. Like, let's keep it 100.
Yeah, 100%.
It was only because of salary.
100%.
It wasn't because of anything else. So, you know, I just think even from a business standpoint, when you really want to look at it, you're looking at Cam behind him. You can actually – there's just a higher upside. It's not about whether you believe Cam could be good or not. But there's – from an asset standpoint, you could potentially get some type of draft pick by the deadline if you don't want to pay him by playing him in the first half and having him sit there. So now we're going to have Cam sitting there, which means you're just going to let his contract run out? Or – because at this point, you're going to give him away for what?
You're probably giving him the Lakers for, like, a second-round pick.
Get me out of here.
That's all
get
I
me
got,
out of here.
Man. That's all I got, man.
Get me out of
Let's get into the last burning question for training camp. Salute to everybody in the chat once again. Hit that thumbs-up button for you boys. Great show tonight. And that's Obi. We didn't really talk about Obi a lot. Well, we did, sort of, it just in terms of trading Randall. But the importance of having Obi play. And you know, I said this on other shows, say it again. We don't have enough athleticism on this team. We talk about Cam, Obi. Those are your two best athletes on this team. He needs more time. And for me, again, like Ian said, I don't see them selling low on Julius. I don't see them attaching an asset to him just to get rid of him. Then you gotta throttle the – lower his minutes and get Obi in there for some more minutes. I want to see him playing with a competent point guard like a Brunson. What impact that will have. I'd like to see – I want to see that dynamic with him and Hartenstein, because I think tapping into Hartenstein's passing ability combined with Obi's ability to move off ball, especially in the half court, the cutting, the backdoor slips, I think him and Hartenstein are going to have a nice connection there. I want to see him play with RJ some more. You know, tap into that. You two homegrown studs, let them get some run together. Because I'd like to see, and you know, I'll give you guys a little sneak peek at our lineup preview. I'd like to see a lineup of Brunson, Grimes, Cam, RJ, Obi. That's my NASCAR lineup. You know what I'm saying? We used to call the Giants defense lineup NASCAR. That's my NASCAR lineup. Nice balance. Shooting, athleticism, inside scoring, outside scoring. Tibbs isn't the coach for that. When it's Johnny Bryant's time, we'll see that. we'll see that with Johnny Bryant. Tibbs ain't the guy for that. You know what I mean? That's a little too wild for him. But I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it, man.
If this roster stays the way that it is going into the regular season, there's going to be pressure on Tibbs to be winning. So
yeah.
You may get that lineup sooner than you expect because
yeah.
– It's going to be project it to be a rough start.
And you get boards out of that lineup.
You get
some solid rebounding out of that lineup, but go ahead.
Yeah, I want to see Obi Toppin play. I mean, when you look at Queen in the Glass and you look at the five most utilized lineups that had over 100 possessions out of the five, four of them were positive with Obi Toppin in them. He just does good things on the floor. Like when you just, yeah. he just, He doesn't need the ball in his hands. He's always moving out in transition. He's looking to cut without the, he's looking to cut, whether it's baseline, whether it's just going down the middle of the lane. He's grabbing solid boards. His jump shot started to fall towards the end of the season. We saw them go on, I think they won about 9 games towards the, in the last 14 towards the end of the season when you had RJ quickly and Toppin just being the main focal points of the team. Obi just does good things. Give him the opportunity to just be on the floor, but see what can happen with other players. Stop being so rigid with these. We got the first unit and the second unit. Mix and match. Feel, just experiment. You know, this is one thing that the Celtics, like, people would always like praise Brad Stevens about is that, yeah. Oh, he would just try out so many different rotations. You know, one night you'll see, I don't even know all the rotations, but he would just try out so many different rotations. And it's just, okay, this will work because we can just show a different look to a team that they haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. JD talked about template coaching last season. That was the theme of last season. It's like, all right, we know who's going to come in for the first quarter, the second quarter. You could just game plan for the Knicks on a night-to-night basis.
Mm-hmm.
Change it up. What, like, just let's see some – do something like flex, like it's fantasy football. Flex, throw a flex in there. Let Obi Top and just go out there, get some buckets, make the offense just much more appealing, one, to watch, and two, just easier on everybody else. He just gets you easy points. And that's something the Knicks just can't even generate. It's just easy points.
Easy
transition. We're dead last. Can we just push the pace a little? Just – you know, play with the times. That's all we need.
I mean, in games last season where Obi played 30-plus minutes, I know it's a very short sample size, 7-8 games. You know, he shot 57% for the field, over 44% from three. And, you know, it was more so towards the end of the season. But it's just the energy, man. You would think a team that is going to – you know, I talked about last season – one of the downfalls of this roster in terms of the fit, the structure, is you didn't have a lot of foot speed in that starting line. I remember CP where, you know, it started in that stretch where we started with the Charlotte Hornets, and it was like an afternoon game. And I think at that point was the, you know, we were going through that rough stretch where we were going to play a lot of young athletic guys.
So what happened,
that whole stretch, we looked a step slow.
Facts.
And we talked about at that time, it's like when you have RJ Fournier, you know, at that point we have Alec Burks or Kemba, and then you have Julius Randle. Like, it's not a lot of foot speed out on the court. You're running and gunning against some of these young teams in the league that just continues to get younger and younger. Mm-hmm. You know, you just want some of that energy. And that's contagious. And he's a guy that can keep the ball moving. Problem is he just – where's his path to have more than 20 minutes? You know, like, is he going to increase 3 minutes to 21? That's not sufficient, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in the off season. Think about this. Everybody was offered for Donovan Mitchell, Bud Julius. And I understand the whole contract thing is a reason for it. But is it really – when Ainge is paying Colin Sexton off an ACL injury.
My man spent the whole year off and got the bag.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying.
He took
like,
a whole year like, off and got paid.
We're not talking about a 31-year-old Julius with a $100 million contract. You know, he's 27. And if Ainge would have kept RJ, he would have given him the extension. So, like, around the NBA, in other words, if your value is up there, there's takers. There's definitely takers, especially when you're on the younger side of things. And at this point, you're just going to continue to either stagnate, you know, OBs, IQs, Grimes. You're going to stagnate their value for a potential future trade. And what's going to happen the next time around is you're going to have to give up the farm and then some. Mm. So I think they have to find a way to see what you got. Yeah. I mean, how worse can it get in terms of value of these young players in future trade talks?
Yeah.
Because I don't think all these guys are going to be here in the future. Not with this front office. I think we've seen that clear right now. We were skeptical before, but I think now we're pretty clear that this core is not going to be here at least long-term.
JD, are you telling me I should not buy the Leon Rose PR stuff where he says we have a bevy of young talent and we're looking for development, and we're excited about the young players on this team, X, Y, and Z?
I mean, when they're saying that, that's why I said I'm holding him accountable, because that's what he said. The statement's read that they're gonna. The emphasis is on the young players. You know, now you see, it's funny because I think when he said that to end the season, I think he thought he was gonna get Donovan Mitchell. I think he thought the team was gonna look different, and it's obvious now they're kind of stuck where it's like, we didn't get Donovan. Now we can't find a taker for Fournier. We can't find a taker for Julius. We're not going to trade Rose. Here we are again with this, a lot of the similar questions in year three. This is year three of Tibbs, right?
Yep. Yes.
Yep.
Year three of Tom Thibodeau's tenure, and year three of them. So, pressure's on now.
You know what? Let me tell you something, man. The best thing you said just now was stagnate value. You know where I'm going with this. You said they run the risk. Al, you know where I'm going with this. They run the
get
risk.
Get me off the show.
It all comes full circle, people. They run the risk of stagnating his value. You know what that means, people in the chat? You know what that translates to?
Stop.
A dud pick.
Stop.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Maybe I just say it too harshly for some to accept. But I have been saying this for months. And they turned on me, Al. They turned on me. That's what I'm trying to say. You are risking stagnating the kid's value by not getting him playing time.
He's almost not a kid.
Yeah, he's about to be 24.
Actually, he's not a kid at all.
He's not a kid at all.
He's close to his prime.
Yeah, he's not a kid at all.
Which is even more of a reason why you should play him, because his prime is right around the corner.
Yeah.
What is he, like 24, 25?
He's 20. Yeah, 24. I don't know if he's 25 this year or just turned 24.
Yeah, you got to play. You got to play Obi Toppin. Like, there's.
Yeah.
Come on. It's too much.
That's all I'm saying, man. All right, let's go rapid fire on a couple of calls, and then we'll wrap up. Great show, man. If you guys missed it, definitely rewind. Salute to everybody in the chat. Hit that thumbs up on for your boys. Salute to the replay gang, everybody catching up on podcasts, whatever method you are watching the show on. Let's go to Jan from D.C. Jan, how you feeling?
Not bad. I got to hand it to you, CP. You're going to die. You're going to die on that island.
Hey!
That's a fact.
It was validated several times, man. I compliment JD for validating the point.
So you
got tricky there, but all right.
It sort of dovetails into my point about the front office. And my point of view on the front office is they're risk averse. They don't want to make any, like, real decisions, and they just want to, like, move assets into the future, and they're more concerned with not making a bad deal than making the right deal. And I think that maybe, you know, the Julius Randle thing, Obi could be one of them, but like signing Jalen Brunson, he's a good player. Mm-hmm. It's a good move, right? But it's a win now move, and you have a young team. So obviously you're not thinking about doing that. So then maybe you're thinking about pairing him with Donovan Mitchell, but then is that fit right? Because then you have two small guards.
Right.
And then trading them all protected our pick for protected picks in the future. That's a win later move, or, you know, gathering assets, I guess, if you want Mitchell. But the Cam trade, was it a good trade? Sure. Yeah. He's a young player. He's athletic. His cost was low. They won the trade. But then where does he fit with the team? He really doesn't. The coach doesn't like him, and it's just another one deal with no real direction for the team. So
yeah.
I just think it's like a collection of short-sighted moves that seem good on the surface when they're talking about them in the room, but they lack the foresight and the direction to steer the team into the future. So that's what I got. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. And it's a valid point, you know, and to Alex's point, how much faith do you guys have in the front office? Yeah, maybe that's a good poll that we could put up, you know, maybe on a scale of, I think we only get four options in the chat. Maybe on a scale of 1 to 4, 1 being, you know, no faith to 4 being a lot of faith. How much faith do you have in the front office right now to carry this team forward? You know, one of the deals that he talked about was the Brunson deal. And I could see both sides of it. Yes, it is sort of a win now move, but he's also 25. And then at the same time, it's like player development is not just the responsibility of the individual player. It's not just the responsibility of the coach. It's everybody involved. It's all five guys on the court. So if you got a terrible point guard or an ineffective point guard and Alec Burks, so on and so forth, that impacts everybody.
Fact.
You know, that impacts everybody's potential, everybody's growth and development. So I see the need to bring in a Brunson here, a talented point guard, but I also see how, okay, when you put him and RJ and Julius and all these guys, it puts you kind of in the middle because they're not a terrible team, but how good can they be? Where is their ceiling? It's questionable. So I can kind of see two sides to the coin there.
Yeah, I would lean more so on the fact that this is a good move for development of everybody else rather than this is just a win-now move. You need a point guard. We haven't had a point guard that can actually steer the ship of this team for quite some time now. And if you want to see guys like RJ, Cam, Grimes, Quickly, everyone else really thrive, you're going to need someone who can steer that ship. And that's what Jalen Brunson can do. So bringing him here and at the age of 25, he's still young. He hasn't reached his prime yet. So he's on this same trajectory as everyone else on this team right now. And at the same time, developing a point guard is probably the most difficult position in the NBA. Not a lot of guys come in ready to play that position. And I like to always like look back at Kyle Lowry or Mike Conley, guys who took some time to develop to become a solid point guard in this league. And when they did get to that point, you know, Conley was – I forget if he did get to the All-Star or not, but close to an All-Star. Kyle Lowry did become an All-Star, especially once he went to Toronto. Conley, once he got to Memphis. Yeah. You know, it takes time for these guys to understand how to organize an offense, how to just manage the entire – like when to be a manager, when to go into attack mode, where to find guys in the right position when they're on the court. You know, that's a very difficult – you're quarterbacking. Mm-hmm. You know, JD loves the NFL NBA comps and playing quarterback. Very few guys come into the league ready day one. They take a couple years before they can really grow and show that they can organize the entire team. So for someone like again, Jalen Brunson, who's already been somewhat established in this league, I think it's been a great move for the Knicks.
And the guy that they, you know, a lot of Knicks fans wanted, DeJounte Murray is going to be 26 in a few weeks. You know, so Brunson just turned 26 last month. So, you know, even the guy you wanted, it's within just a couple months of age difference. And he would have cost you actual assets if he was if you were going to get him via trade and you would have not signed Jalen Brunson. I'm not at all tripping about the Jalen Brunson move. Young player. And I always prefer getting better through free agency because you don't have to give up anything.
Right.
And if you look at history with Kawhi and LeBron and a lot of like teams that have actually, you know, gone on to win championships, you know, those teams created those super teams through free agency. And that's what allowed them to fill up the roster because they didn't have to give up assets to do it that way. So I think he's more of like a table setter. He took a flyer on a guy that believes he could potentially one day become an all-star. Does he take, you know, does he become Fred VanVleet? Is he already better than Fred VanVleet? I think that's a good comparison there and a good, you know, debate question. So we'll see. But, you know, front office has a lot of work to do, in my opinion. A
couple more before we roll. Let me go to the Lou, man. I got to hear from my guy, Jay, from the Lou. Jay, how you feeling, bro?
Oh, man, CP, Alex, JD, it's nothing but love for y'all, man. I appreciate everything y'all did this summer, staying on tune, staying on top of all this mess we didn't got ourselves into, man. Mm-hmm. Hey, let me get into it, man. Coming from the middle of the map, hey, this offseason was very embarrassing in my opinion, guys. From the standpoint from just our front office, you know, I just think they could have did so much better, you know, from the start, you know, with the draft. I just think, you know, we could have took advantage of that in a much better way. I understand, yeah, I did want a Donovan. I really did. But Danny was, you know, giving out those mob prices. And, you know, it's crazy that he's still doing it. And it's been almost 10 years since that, you know, Celtics situation that he had going on. And it's crazy to think that, you know, we was going to jump for it with the RJ situation. I can't even believe it. But, yeah, I'm glad we didn't do it. But now here's the situation now. It's like, okay, can we peel back on some of these guys like, a Julian, an Elvin, you know, attach a pick, get them out of here so we can get our young guys rocking, you know.
Yeah.
That's my main concern is just, you know, okay, we couldn't get it done. You guys really got to peel back now, all right? I know it's becoming a situation, especially like the last 2 years, that, okay, when we couldn't get it done with the draft and free agency, all right, let's just go to Tibbs' plan. And Tibbs' plan was, let's run these vets. I'm going to try to get as many wins as I can. And if we can't do that this year, guys, we really can't. So right now I'm really talking to, you know, Rose and the gang in the office. Like, guys, you got to figure out a way to, you know, let's get these young guys rolling, you know, see what we got. You know, and potentially it could be a losing season. That's cool. But we're going to have to put ourselves out there to, you know, get a better pick. We cannot be in the middle of the pack. I mean, since Leon's been here, we've pretty much been a middle of the pack team. And that's pretty terrible, you know, for somebody who doesn't even have a direction. So with that being said, that goes in to talk to RJ. RJ is our guy, man. He's our focus. So, I mean, we finally gave him the keys. Can we let him drive now? You know what I'm saying? Like, we're talking about a guy who came in, who barely had a summer league, who barely had a rookie year. You know, I said this before, you know, he didn't have a second-year summer league. I think we really need to just go ahead and just let him rock, you know.
Okay.
Along with him, go ahead and give it to Cam as well. You know, let him rock with the second unit. With this being said, I know that means we got to move somebody out. Okay, that's cool. Let's do that. Let's really get some guys out so we can get some guys in, see if they got talent. If not, you know, let's just result into, you know, pushing back, you know, and see if we can get a top five pick. This is really where we at right now. The front office has let us down these last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I'm blaming them, but it's just like, okay, it's kind of showing, guys. So what are you guys going to do to help out the fans, all right? Coming from the middle of the map, much love to you guys.
You,
keep
bro.
It pushing.
Appreciate it, man. Rapid fire we go. You know what, let me take the – Zay, I see you on the Discord. I'll have you close as we only got a couple minutes left on the phones. Let me hear from Cole from BK, close us out on the phones. Cole, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, CP?
Good, man.
Well, I'm hearing a lot of hate for the management in the front office, and I feel like we got to pump the brakes because, number one, this is the third best record last year, third best record in a disappointing season in the past decade. Even if you go back to past 20, he was pretty good. You look at the draft, no missed picks. Steals in the past 2 years outside the lottery with Grimes and Quickly. Trades, I know we were just talking about no bad trades, but that's a real point. Derrick Rose for a second-rounder, Dennis Smith Jr., was a steal. Trading the 11th pick for three future first-rounders is wild, especially when we're talking now about, man, what are we going to do with all these picks? How are we going to keep guys? The only reason we were talking about throwing in so many picks for Mitchell was because we traded one pick for three just a few months before. In the media, I know it looked real sloppy with Donovan Mitchell, but the reality is there were no leaks before that drama, and so you can guess that a lot of it was coming from Danny Ainge. This is a tight organization, even if there are a lot of cooks. And then you look at relationships. Johnny Bryant could have been the head coach of Utah. He said, no, I'm staying in New York. Kenny Payne was incredible. Passed some college jobs last year to stay an extra year in New York. We got Gerson Rosas, and he might have been a weird choice to lead the negotiations with Mitchell, but Justin Zanuck was a guy that he knew. And keep in mind, we had a month or two where we were negotiating exclusively to the point where the Cavs stepped out of trade negotiations because they thought we were the front runner. Even on contracts, Fournier was a dud of a contract, but that's because the three-point shooter market crashed. Duncan Robinson, Joe Harris, and maybe even Buddy Hield were worse deals, and so the fact of the matter is, even though Fournier was a bad contract, it wasn't a bad signing at the time. Randall wasn't a bad signing at the time. Even Brunson, by the end of next year, is going to be about the 20th highest paid point guard in the league. That's going to be a steal, especially when it ages through 2025 and the cap space or salary cap balloons. Like, yes, there are a lot of cooks, but we can't punish these guys for Steve Mills' sins talking about the Kevin Knox and Frank Ntilikina picks. and the next guy's not going to come through trade. Keep in mind who wasn't bidding for Donovan Mitchell. Oklahoma City, New Orleans, Houston, and even Utah now are all going to have more picks to throw. Yeah, exactly. And all those guys are going to have more picks to throw than us. It's going to come from the draft. And Walt Pernin has been money with us, was money with Utah. Brock Aller, like we were talking earlier about how great the Cavs were in terms of managing cap space in that second rebuild with LeBron. That was Brock Aller. I think there's a lot of talent in that front office. And the fact of the matter is that there are a few guys like Scott Perry who are floaters and Gershon Rosas. But there's a clear guy with a clear skill set for a lot of important jobs. Worldwide West handles relationships. Brock Aller handles salary cap. Walt Pernin handles the draft, and they're really excellent at what they do. We got to pump the brakes on Hayden on these guys because they're too good, and it'd be a shame if we lose them.
Okay. All right. Cole from BK coming in here with the contrarian point of view. I like that. Rate that call in the chat. I want to nominate that one for call of the night. What do you guys think, man? One being trash, five being facts. What do you guys think about that? I thought Cole laid out a well-thought-out opposing opinion.
He definitely did.
Yeah.
He definitely did. Got to put respect on it.
Yeah.
But I still think it's fair to question how all this went down. Those are all facts that he mentioned, like how they've done player evaluation, signed the contracts at the right time. You could get behind some of the thinking,
mm-hmm.
right? Understanding that why you use Rosas in the negotiations with Zanuck. Those all make a lot of sense. But still, when it comes down to the actual negotiation, it's still the same process. You got to have a process. And that's my gripe. Do you actually have a process in what you're doing? And also the other thing is, are you going to be definitive finally in what direction you want to go as a franchise instead of just playing down the middle saying, we're going to be competitive, but we're also going to try to develop. But we're still going to try to be competitive. We're also going to try to develop. Like, you can't do all this. You can't choose a direction.